Your heartbeat is extraordinarily slow. You're a mutant.
A Witcher. Geralt of Rivia.
The famous White Wolf. I thought you'd have fangs or horns or something.
I had them filed down.
Welcome to Kinfolk Lore, a podcast where we explore fictional worlds that bring people together. I'm Andrea.
And I'm Paul, and we're cousins who love to talk about world building and sci-fi and fantasy. We hope that over time, through our shared love of our favorite stories, we all become family on this podcast journey.
For our second season, we are discussing The Witcher, the fantasy show by Netflix. Today, we will talk about the major plot points in episode 5, titled Bottled Appetites, and give you some of our reflections on the show and takeaways that will help you navigate this world.
In addition, Kinfolk Lore contains adult content. So if you're not into that sort of thing, you may want to use your safe word, kumquat, all right? And this may not be the podcast for you, but otherwise, you've come to the right place for commentary on magical orgies and apple juice. So tip your bard and control your chaos. This is episode 5.
All right, so in the summary, we'll start off with the episode opens with a man preserving a piece of flesh in a jar.
This guy is really feeling himself in the mirror before this happens. Like, he's, like, looking at his abs. He's doing, like, a dance. He's, like, you know, he's talking about surprises, how he loves surprises and magical surprises. It's crazy. This guy is, you know.
But let's be honest. He looks good. Like, I would be checking myself out too. Like, he looks good.
Yeah, he is definitely in taking a form that is attractive, and he's not going to be happy about his next move. It's not going to be a good one. Let's his face when he finds out who he's going to transform into. Wow.
So the same night that Ciri escaped from in episode 1 approaches this man who is a Doppler. A Doppler is a shapeshifter. And the Black Knight wants the Doppler to impersonate Mousesack.
Yeah. His face when he sees Mousesack, he's like, do we have to change into this one?
I love Mousesack, but, you know, Mousesack's a little rugged looking. Like, he's a little old.
I mean, yeah.
He hasn't been to Planet Fitness in a minute.
The word you're looking for is frumpy. He's frumpy. Compared to this guy, aww, it looks like he stepped off of, like, a Vogue cover. He's like, do I have to look like, you know, Mousesack? Really? Ah, sucks.
So in order to complete the process of the shape-shifting, they have to kill Mousesack.
So let's do what we haven't done this season, but is a staple here on Kinfolk Lore. And pour one out.
One out.
For our homeboy, Mousesack.
Mousesack. Man, I love Mousesack.
Yeah.
Just, like, taking care of Ciri, buddying up with Geralt. Mousesack's a good dude.
He is a good dude. And he, like, really, like, held him down with, like, holding off people at the castle. And, you know, it, again, highlights, you know, I felt bad about going so strong 2 episodes ago. But fucking Frangilla. Fucking Franny. Here she is again.
Did you just call her Franny?
Franny on that bullshit. Okay? Like, God, man, she is just on one all the time. Like, how does that feel? Like, having your power stripped from you? And it's just like, man, she's the
worst.
Yeah,
she was a little extra. And Mousesack was just trying to tell her, you're better than this. Like,
yeah,
you shouldn't be with these people. Like, you come from the Brotherhood. You can do better than this. And she was just like, yeah,
I differ with him on one thing, though. He was like, I know your education. You're better than this. She went to fucking boring Hogwarts, dude. She did not go to an elite school. That school is not good, okay? They're turning people into eels. They're fucking, like, you know, corrective plastic surgery through magical means. This shit is not the move. Anyway. That's what I feel. But we differ. We differ there. It's okay to have differences of opinions with people that you love.
All right. Well, poor Malsak.
Yeah.
So they send the shapeshifter after Cirilla in Brokilon Forest. So then the next scene, here's our girl, Yennefer, looking fantastic.
She's looking good. She is.
The dress is fire. Yep.
Yeah.
I was like, where can I get that?
Oh my gosh. It's, you know,
Alexa, can you find this dress for me? She's looking great.
Yeah.
So she's bargaining with a local apothecary who seems like he is a former mage of the Brotherhood.
And he decides to give her like a total like marketing TED talk. Like, you know, like, hey, you know, like out here, like in the mage, isn't it good to be without any of the constraints of the Brotherhood? And she's like, yeah, out by yourself, no resources, no money. Yeah, that sounds wonderful. And she's like kind of dunking on him. And I just want to mention, he's saying all these things about success while he looks like somebody smeared shit on his teeth. He's not doing well, okay? This guy is not doing well at all. Doesn't have a dental plan, lost his health insurance. What is going on, okay?
Okay. Can I just, we started off already and we are already like judgy and just savaging all the characters here.
Oh, man.
Apologies to our listeners. Apparently we're in a mood.
I mean, come on. He looks like he has shit on his teeth. It's true. Like, he's like...
Oh, man. Okay, so after their conversation, Yennefer gets an idea, and she begins her trade as a local witch. She's paid to perform all kinds of magic by the various townspeople, including curing erectile dysfunction.
I love her for that.
I was like, first of all, good for the show for taking it there. And I just love how the whole scene is funny because they're basically, the wife is like, listen, I love this guy. We got to make this work.
Yeah. I've waited my whole life for him. And now, you know, and he's like, there's no shortage of passion. And then she like blows smoke. I also appreciate that Yennefer is an innovator. She's allowing people to vape Viagra. Not like, they don't have to like, you know, like actually take a pill. It's not in pill form, it's smoke form. I was like, wow, she's out here vaping. It's cool.
And also they can control it.
Yeah.
With the safe word. I was like, this is...
She says...
One of the pharmaceuticals needs to get Yennefer on their payroll. She's out here innovating.
Oh, man, but she said she comes with that safe word hella fast, too. She's like, well, you're going to need to say a kumquat. She's like, wow, that was fast. You kind of thought that one out already. She knew. She knew what she was in for. It's pretty cool. It's a good scene.
So just as she's helping this couple, the local authorities come in to hassle her for money. Yennefer, being Yennefer, is like, yeah, no, I'm not paying you a single dime. Get out of my house. I'm not scared of you.
Yeah.
And she is arrested.
And... a lot of sad couples outside, really disappointed. This mayor is the most diabolical cock blocker of all times. Of all times. Like, so many sad people as they walked out with Yennefer in cuffs. I guarantee it. Not a good look.
She's providing a service.
She is.
For everybody.
For everyone. Everyone that is included. I love that her slogan, too, was freaking amazing. Like... the slogan was, correctives quite effective whatever your objective. That was the slogan on the wall. That was her business sign. Correctives quite effective whatever your objective. Like, she was out here marketing. She's running with it. She's good to go.
So let's just call it. Yennefer's doing all right by herself without the Brotherhood.
Great.
Up to this point.
Yeah, phenomenal. Like, she's like out here living her best life. It's amazing.
Yeah. So in the next scene, we go to Cirilla's timeline. Some of the dryads are talking about her. They're a little wary of her because she is, you know, she lied to them. She told them her name was Fiona. She's not been really forthcoming with them. And they're very aware that she's powerful, and they fear that power. Mm-hmm. Their discussion is interrupted by one of them bringing the head of a Nilfgaard spy.
Yo, two heads and the lady who's the head of the dryads. Her face was Like an auntie who sees somebody who doesn't ever cook, and then that auntie never cooks. She brings the food on the table, and the person that does normally all the cooking looks like, ooh, okay, bit much, and just lets it go. It was funny. That was a funny reaction. Anyway,
I was also like, this is a wild escalation. Yeah. Like, you chopping off heads, that seems extra there.
My question is this, though. Does Ciri have the ability to talk Elder? Because they're speaking in Elder, and she looks like dumbfounded when they cut back over to her. Like, she doesn't know what they've been saying at all.
I don't think she can speak Elder.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I picked up. That's a good little
show. I don't think she can speak Elder. Yeah. And so the leader announces that Ciri can stay. Mm-hmm. I also noticed that Ciri is looking a little out of place in this episode. Like, can we get her some new clothes?
Yeah, she looks like she's still at court. And possibly let's get her Elder Rosetta Stone. She's going to need it. She's going to need that, okay?
Yeah, if she's going to stay, she needs to learn Elder. That's their native tongue. Yeah. So I don't, yeah. Cirilla.
Yeah.
So we go to Geralt's timeline where Yaskier, who has just had his heart broken, is walking along, and he comes upon Geralt, who's in a terrible mood.
Yeah,
and is searching for something in a pond. And rather than leaving his friend alone, he just starts talking at him. Yaskier is not a great friend in this moment because Geralt's clearly going through something, and he's out here like, my heart is broken. Bro, what are you even doing? You can't even fish. Like, really? Just not. I was like, can you give the man some space? Can you give him some space? He's obviously grump. He's answering you in one word answers. He doesn't want to talk to you right now.
It's the worst thing. It's like when somebody calls you up and you make the mistake of answering, and then they just go in like right away. It's like, what has it been, 5 years, 10 years, a decade? Like, oh man, it's been so long. Like, I wonder what you've been up to. Like, what's happening? And then he starts like dunking on him about his fishing skills. And then, you know, Geralt loses it, which is pretty hilarious. But the other thing that's pretty funny is he starts like, Geralt doesn't play fair. He takes a shot at the one thing that the bard feels really confident about, his singing. It's pretty.
I was like, Geralt.
I mean, the guy has a number one hit out in these streets. Like, what are you talking about? Like, come on, man. Like, it's not cool.
At this point in the storyline, I'm willing to say that it's not just a number one hit. It's a classic.
It is a classic. It is. It is, as you said, Don't Stop Believing of the continent. It is true. It's great.
So Geralt tells Yaskier that he's looking for a djinn, which is basically a genie, because he can't sleep. And Yaskier is like, oh, yeah, you're looking for this genie because of your destiny and the kid that you can't get away from. And the two of them fight over the container that holds the djinn and free it.
Yeah.
Which, and a djinn is basically, you know, Yaskier says this is anticlimactic because it's invisible. You can't actually see it.
Yeah.
So nothing happens when they open up the container, and then suddenly there's like this magical invisible force over the pond.
And he's like, is this anticlimactic or is it? I mean, I cracked up because you see the pond and the whole thing. But the other thing that's wild is he frees it through the fight, shatters the container, and then after he shatters the container, he just goes in and tries to take this man's three wishes. Like, he's not a good friend.
And all of his wishes are ridiculous. His first wish is, like, to smite, I guess, the woman who broke his heart's husband. And then he's like, she won't take me. His second wish is to have this woman take him back. I mean, his wishes are not well thought out. He's clearly still harboring some pain over his breakup.
Yeah, he's definitely on the breakup. And what that guy, who he tries to, like, just talk about is the first guy is the bard, one of the competing bards. So he's another songwriter who's actually a bard.
Okay.
And, yeah, he tries to get so it's pretty hilarious because he just goes at him. He's like a competing bard, and I don't think that bard hooked up with his with the girlfriend, but he's just always talks bad about him to everybody. So he just like selfishly like, kill that dude. And oh yeah, by the way, I want this girl to come back to me. It is wild, super wild.
talk about beefs. I mean, this is, that's a, like, that's pretty, that's,
oh,
insane.
Oh my gosh.
And so Geralt is pretty annoyed that he's using all the wishes and basically says that he just wants peace. And as soon as he says that, I mean, there's some action with the djinn here. Like, Geralt uses a sign to get rid of the djinn. But as soon as he says that, Yaskier loses his voice and starts spitting up blood.
Ugh.
Not good. And yeah, Geralt is really upset about this and springs into action, which I was just like, oh, you do love him, even though you try to pretend you're not really friends. And rushes him to the nearest town, which I think is called Rind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he gets to the town and asks for the healer, and he's referred to an elf named Chiridin. Is that Chiridin? Chiridin, I think, is right.
Yeah, these names. So all our listeners, these names, man, we love you guys because we have, like, traversed some of the toughest names in, like, in the language lexicon to, like, bring this content. It's really funny. Anyway.
Chiridin tells Geralt that what ails Yaskier is magical, that his throat has been attacked, and that if they don't do something quickly, it's going to spread and it could kill him. So he tells him that there's a local mage, but he gives him a warning. The mage is dangerous and malicious and trapped currently in the mayor's house.
It leaves out major details. Like, it leaves out major details. Almost doesn't even want to tell him. He just, like, kind of like, I don't want to tell him. You know
well,
what I mean?
He wasn't going to tell. He was like, you should go to the next town and find a mage. And Geralt was like, there's got to be a local mage, right? And he was like, not really. And Geralt pushed him. This is.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. All of this is Geralt's fault. Well, not all of it, but most
a good
of
amount.
It is Geralt's
yeah,
fault.
A lot of it in this particular case, for sure.
So the mage in question is our girl Yennefer, who is out here putting on a little Fenty lipstick, and Taseya shows up. And you know, as Yennefer's looking into the mirror, Taseya just shows up behind her, and Taseya decides she's gonna spill all the tea. She's like, let me take a seat at the bed and tell you what's been happening since you left. The king of Eridan is dead. There's a new king. Frangilla is doing quite well in Nilfgaard. What's going on with you? What's happening?
And Yen is like humming in her head, bitch, don't kill my vibe. Like, she's like, she's sitting here like got Kendrick on blast. She is like not having it.
But I like Taseya, but this, when she's like, Frangilla is doing well in Nilfgaard, I was like, okay, shame. Nobody asked about Frangilla.
Yeah.
Yen and Frangilla were not friends. This was clearly like she was just trying to be petty.
Yeah.
So she basically is there to warn Yen and to ask her to come back to Aretuza, because she, for a number of years, we're not sure how many, Yen has been out here doing her own thing. The Brotherhood has essentially left her alone, but now it seems that she's doing some stuff that has her back on their radar. So, you know, Taseya is there to be like, listen, we don't like what you're doing, and we don't like what you did by abandoning your post, but you can come back to Aretuza and you'll get a clean slate and we still want to work with you. And Yen is not having it. She's basically like, you can go. And Taseya calls her out on the fact that Yen is doing all of this stuff that is not permitted, so she can break the enchantment that was performed during her transformation and be able to have a child. And Taseya doesn't understand this.
I'm with her. She's got.
She's like, I don't. Why do you want a baby? I'm confused. You know. She's like, I don't. You out here. You have a great career. Look at your marketing skills. You came up with your own branding. You're out here helping the local couples so that they can have fulfilling relationships. And okay, so you may have been imprisoned by the mayor, but
yeah. But she even flipped that, because the mayor is walking around naked, like, looking crazy. Like, so she flipped that around. That's crazy.
So she's like, I don't know why you'd want to complicate your life. You know, like, childcare is expensive. The Brotherhood doesn't really offer a good family leave plan. Why are we doing this?
Why?
And Yennefer basically says she wants her choice back, and she wants to be, you know, she wants everything. She wants to be able to be powerful, and also she wants to be able to have a child if she wants one. And so Tisea leaves after Yennefer essentially dismisses her and says she won't return to Aretusa. Just then, Geralt and Jaskier, well, it's not just that in that moment, but the next scene for us. Geralt and Jaskier arrive to the mayor's house. Jaskier is doing worse. Like, it's clearly spreading. He's getting sicker. And Geralt takes him inside to find them, as you mentioned, the mayor's walking around. Totally naked, totally confused and disoriented. And he's muttering something about apple juice. And then he just falls asleep.
It's great. He's like, oh, she wants the apple juice. She wants apple juice. Yeah. Oh.
And Geralt is like, so this is not what I was expecting, but where can I find the mage? And despite all of the red flags.
Yeah.
Just like when they open the door and there's that like mist outside, Jaskier and Geralt are both like, right.
Yeah.
And he's like, all right, we're going to go of it. They continue because he's worried about his friend, and they stumble into a room where there is an orgy.
Sex party! It was amazing. There is like everyone, it was like crazy. I was like, whoa, this is a sex party. What's happening? And Jaskier's face, he's like choking, about to die, and his eyes get big, like, what the hell did we just walk into? It's great. It's absolutely classic. And Yen is sitting there crazy calm, because in the scene previous, she does tell Tisaya, can you go? Because I have some business to handle. So she was like, this was her business. She had gotten these people to pay, got them into a spell. It's pretty epic. She's doing her thing out here in these streets.
Yeah. She's bored, you know. She only created this little orgy so that she could have some fun, and she's not even enjoying it.
No, she's definitely not. She's sitting there like she's the calmest person at the party. Like she's just like she's like chilling. Everyone else is going.
So Geralt approaches her. They meet for the first time, and immediately you can tell they're extremely interested in each other. But Geralt comes with the weak game. I bought your apple juice.
Like,
this guy needs some real help here. Like, this is not smooth. So they have some chat. Yen has heard of him before. She's clearly been listening to the bard's music.
Yeah.
And after some sexual innuendo, Geralt says that he'll pay any price for her to save his friend's life. And in a single word, the word ragamuffin, which we will talk about in 1 minute. she ends the enchantment, and so this was different from Stregobor's enchantment, I think, right? Because when she ends the enchantment, all of these people are mortified.
She was using real people. What Stregobor was like, I thought it was an illusion. Like, it was,
yeah,
like,
exactly. Yeah. I thought Stregobor's stuff was all illusion. I mean, they weren't having sex or anything. They were naked women, but I thought it was an illusion. These are real people that she was mind controlling.
Yeah.
And this is pretty gross behavior, Yennefer. Out of boredom. These people are mortified.
Yeah.
So they snap out of it and they start to look for their clothes and get the hell out of there. So let's just talk about this word ragamuffin.
Great safe word. Really great safe word. You know?
I have never heard this word outside of speaking to other people who are of Jamaican descent.
Yeah, that's true.
As I heard it, my head snapped up from the outline because I was like, that can't be what she said.
Exactly. Oh, man, it was so good because I didn't hear, like, she said it, and then every time after the first time I heard it in a Jamaican accent. Like, every single time. It was like, yes, okay, here we go. Somehow our people have infiltrated the continent and given them one of the best words in the lexicon.
My mother uses this word all the time. It's great. It's like, it's one of the few words that she still uses you know, from her childhood. And yeah. It's so funny because I just knew, like, I just know what it means. I don't think my mother's ever defined it.
No.
you have to use context clues to understand that she's talking about a person of low worth.
Yes.
Sometimes a child who is misbehaving or disheveled.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
It
was awesome. It makes you think that's what she thought about the people she was mind controlling. Like, that was her safe word. She was like, these low-rent people. Oh, man. So good. Super duper good. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot in that section. So much. The chemistry between Yen and Geralt right away is super clear. Like, you know that this is going somewhere. She's clearly heard the legends of him. He is, like, instantly taken by her and tongue-tied. We're going to give him tongue-tied because the apple juice game was weak. So we're going to give him, like, a little bit, you know, lost for words. You know, and I think, like, it sets up the rest of everything that happens here. And I think also the dryad piece. I'm just really more and more impressed with the dryads the further we go. I don't know where their story leads, but right now I'm really, really impressed with the leader, who I'm assuming she's kind of the leader, how she is with Ciri and in general with the rest of the people that are part of that order, you know?
Yeah, she's very fair. And I also think that she understands that Ciri's position, and she's giving her more leeway than they would normally give visitors, because it seems like when they first get to Brokolan that people don't often come and go. Like, you come, you stay, and that's pretty much it, or you're disposed of. But she's giving Ciri a lot of choice here, and I think it's because she knows that Ciri has a destiny that she needs to fulfill. But she also, I think, and this is some subtext, I'm reading into it a little bit, but I think that she's also a person who thinks that Ciri has to want to fulfill the destiny, that she would give, you know, if they had to give her an out, if there was a way for her to avoid it, I think that Brokolan Forest would be a place for Ciri to do that as well.
100%. And I think, I mean, we'll talk about it, like, that scene hasn't come up yet, so I won't go totally into it, but I will just mention that your subtext makes a lot of sense, because when I was watching, I feel like she already knows a lot with some of the clues that she gives and some of the things she says to Ciri, even when later on in the episode when some things happen in Brokolan Forest, but she never attempts to take away her choice. She just never attempts to. She said, you know what? I need to leave this. This has to be up to her to make those decisions. So it's really cool.
Yeah, I really like that she's one of the few people in this story who's giving Ciri a choice all the time and not telling her, you need to go find Geralt. You need to do this. You need to do that. She's just sort of like, you're powerful, and we can. If you want this to be your safe harbor, it is here for you. So I really like them too. I really hope that they're going to be part of the story for a while, because they were a very interesting ad. They did seem a little out of place at first, but I love this group of women. They're incredible.
I agree. Really, really awesome. So moving on to the next portion. After attending to Yaskier, Yen insists that Geralt take a bath. She can not only smell his horse, by, you know, what she's smelling, she can also see its color. Like, she's basically saying, like, you stink so bad, I know what color roach is. So he has to go take a bath.
Can we talk about Geralt doing some self-care here?
Yeah.
Okay, so everywhere he goes, people are like, your clothes suck. you don't look good. He smells bad, apparently. He's not sleeping. Geralt needs a little self-care.
He needs a spa day. It's necessary.
And even when they're in the bath together, he still looks dirty. Like, I don't understand. Geralt, can we exfoliate your face? Like, what's happening here?
Just wash it. Exfoliate would be extra. Just, like, dip your face in the water. It's okay. That's what it's there for, you know? Like, it's crazy. So, you know, she joins him, and the two of them bond about
their unusual circumstances. So they're joined in the bathroom and in the bathtub. And the thing about it is, you know, Geralt is like, you know, trying to check out a little look in the mirror. And she's like, wait, turn around. And he tries to sneak a peek. And she's all like, you know, nope, you're not going to do that. And he's all like, well, that's not fair. And she says, anyone who plays fair doesn't intend on winning. So pretty like, you get a little bit more into Yen's mind of like how she sees things. We've already seen a lot of that out of her, but it's pretty cool. And then Geralt goes after he gets out of the bath in some pretty snug clothing, which is hilarious. Like, Yennefer,
it's so funny that she's like, this is all I could find, really. And yeah, it's like basically form-fitting clothes.
Yeah, and she's like checking him out, like checking his ass out and everything when he walks in the room. Like, it's pretty hilarious. Like, so she's done this on purpose. So he's walking in a nice little suit that she's designed. She's also a designer. Look at that. She doesn't need anything else. Her profession is really taking off. And he notices, Geralt, that she's outfitted the room to perform a spell, and that basically she's put on the floor a symbol of what was on the top of the container that the djinn was found in. And it's very, very funny scene where she starts talking about it, and then Yen turns around and says, oh, yes, please continue. Tell me how things work. And she's basically saying, dude, you're mansplaining to me about spells. And it has a lot of funny context, because I'll give a little bit. We don't talk about the books often, but I actually read the chapter, which I'll talk more later on about what that is, that this is taken from. And in the chapter, he is walking around here making incantations that everyone laughs at because it makes no fucking sense. So this is like, so she's basically like, dude, you can't even like say a spell. Like, what are you talking about? Telling me how magic works. So it's pretty funny.
I'm going to use that line. Yes, please tell me how stuff works.
Yeah, exactly. It's really good. It's really, really good. So she says and elaborates that she needs Yaskier to make his last wish in order to bring back the djinn, and so that she can capture it. Like, it's becoming clearer that she has a plan that she wants to enact with the djinn. Yen gives Geralt some herbs, and because the herbs soften him a little bit, allows her to get into his head. She's had a hard time being able to do what she's done with most people, which is get into their heads and control them. Using the herbs allows that to happen, and when he wakes up, he is in a cell with Sheridan, who tells him that he went on a rampage throughout the town. This was pretty hilarious because, you know, Sheridan was basically trying to, little bit of a hater. He was trying to send him out of town so he wouldn't meet Yen. So it's pretty funny that they end up in a cell together in the end anyway. So he's been tracking him, obviously. So Yen starts to perform the magic in the same chamber that Yaskier is in, convalescing in, kind of like, recovering. And Yaskier awakes and sees that she's, you know, a little threatening, a little scary. So he's like, hey, did we kind of, you know, get together? And she turns around and says, oh, no, not that one. And he jumps out of the bed, moves around.
This was great. Immediately he's like, oh, man, did I have a bad one-night stand? And then he's like, oh, no, that's not what's going on here.
I mean, it's kind of crazy. I mean, because Yen is out here looking good on the edge of the bed. But when she turns around, she must have a crazy look in her eyes, because Yaskier is like, fuck this. I don't care how you look. Out of here, all right? And you know, and he sings a remix. He finally, after all this time, has dropped the remix. He starts out, toss a coin to your penis, oh valley of penis. The remix has dropped after much anticipation. It is out here. It's great.
He does his best stuff when he's under duress.
I agree 100%. So at the cell, meanwhile, back in the cell, the guard that Geralt knocked out, right, and to get into the mayor's house, which happened earlier in the show, basically comes in and finds out that he's a witcher and he wants to, you know, enact his revenge. And he's basically beating on him and, you know, kind of is like torturing him in a sense, and then ask him for his last words, to which Geralt says, I want you to burst, you son of a whore. Finally.
Harsh words.
Harsh words, but
finally we get, like, that was, like, you know, maybe you got to rough Geralt up for him to become the orator that he was meant to be. Because we've been waiting for this. Where's that guy? That guy's good. So at that moment, the guard's head burst. And we realize, right, that he is the one who actually has the wishes. It's revealed that he has the wishes because he has two marks on his arm. So this would make his second wish, which was a really nice wish.
Being to, you know, have Yaskir's voice go away.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not poor. Oh, I just, their relationship is so fraught.
Yeah, it is. It really is, but it's a highlight of this show.
Because it's funny, but I'm just like, you guys are not great friends to each other.
No, not at all. Not at all. It's great. So then the djinn returns, and Yaskir escapes to find Geralt. He's very excited to find Geralt. He's okay, good, great. You're okay. Everybody's okay. Let's get out of here. I'm ready to go. Like, let's stop. Like, gotta get the hell out of there. But Geralt doesn't want to go. He hears that Yennefer is basically, he sees and puts together that Yennefer wants to become the vessel for this djinn, that she is actually wanting to harness its power to become more powerful. And become the container, trap the djinn inside of her body because the former container was broken. And, you know, Yaskir's like, nah, bruh, let her die. Let's go.
Yeah, he's like, that's okay. Poor Yennefer. She's crazy. Bye.
and then Chiridin is all like, oh, you have to go in and save her. I know how you feel. And Geralt with the best line, dude, you're making me uncomfortable. Okay? Get away. Shit is great. Oh my God. I was cracking up when he drops those. So at that point, Geralt runs in, finds Yen struggling as the djinn is getting stronger. And Yen is like not sure why the djinn is getting stronger, but he tells her that the reason that it's getting stronger is because he is actually the one who has the wishes. So Yennefer wants him to make the wish, like, you know, and he refuses. He's like, no, I'm not going to make the wish. She said, you can have anything you want. You can become, you know, no longer be a witcher. Like, basically trying to promote him, just make the wish. And Geralt silently, through all of the sounds of the djinn, does make a wish. And this wish is what the title of the book, the title of this chapter in the book, all derive from. It's the last wish. And it's a wish that will have far-reaching effects and is much of the commentary of the fandom for the rest of this series. And so he does make the wish. And at that point, the djinn leaves and the two of them are portaled. It becomes clear that they're portaled by Yen when the house starts to crumble, and they bicker for a little bit about, you know, the fact that he messed up her opportunity to become the container. He says he saved her life, and the two of them, you know, it's a bone sesh. It's time. Yeah. It's time. Yeah. Now.
I mean, they, all this pent up frustration, all this conversation they've been having, they just want to have sex. I mean, these are two very attractive people. I get it.
I get it. I totally get it. And it's been building up for a while. It didn't happen in the bathtub. It didn't happen at an orgy. It was bound to happen, you know, after a strenuous situation, much physical exertion. Here they go. And here comes Chiridin, getting on his Jorah Mormont to watch. Creeping out of the shadows, much like a Tyrion on a ship, to watch the two main characters handle their business. Okay? They're doing what they got to do. And he says, well, they're alive, and he wants to leave. And Yaskir is like, oh, you know, crying about, like, them being dead before all this happens.
No, he's worried about his future. Like, yeah. He's, let's be honest, he's like, this is not how it was supposed to go. Man, maybe I can write a song off of this.
He hits him with the, you always loved my voice. No, his first wish was for your voice to go away, bro. He's like, he always loved my voice. It's wild. It's super wild. He's like, you know, he wants another number one, and he's not going to stop until he gets it. And he feels like he may have just lost his opportunity with no more Geralt of Rivia stories. Pretty funny. Pretty funny. So Yen, in a major twist and change to anyone who is like a follower of this story or has read the books or watched the game, the show makes a little bit of a departure, and I think it's because we don't know audibly. The author has never revealed, from what my knowledge is, what it is. Basically, they make a slight change in the book, and they say Yen asks him what he wished for, and Geralt doesn't respond, and he's asleep. That's a little bit different than in the books, which we'll go over, because she does know the wish in the books, and there's another take on that. Meanwhile, we flash back to Brokolan Forest, where Mousak, who we know is the Dobbler, arrives, and Ciri, of course, is excited. Dara isn't really feeling this whole situation. He's kind of like, man, Brokolan Forest has, like, diversity. There's people who look like me. There's other. I don't know if I want to just roll off out of Brokolan Forest, you know, and nobody's hunting me out there. Out in the real other world, they're trying to kill elves. Like, I don't really want to go. Ciri kind of is all about it. She wants to go. She says her goodbyes to the dryads. And she tells Dara he can come with them.
I need you. Like, she says, you can come too. And he's kind of like, and she's like, I need you.
Yeah.
Which I was just like, this is a little emotional manipulation. You don't act. If you're with Mousak, you don't need Dara.
Yeah.
You could have let him stay.
Let him stay. Like, he's found a place where he can be safe. His whole family's been wiped out. And he's a little salty when he shows up. He's like, and she goes, he's like, and then Dara goes, family. Like, and he's like hitting her with it. Like, hey, yeah, he may be like family, but your family killed my whole family, right? So I think there's going to be more to that story than what that's going to be revealed for all of us anyway. But anyway, the long and the short of it is Ciri decides to leave. Dara is taken, you know, with her by Ciri. And they leave Brokolan Forest with Mousak. And the head of the Dryads tells her, you know, to really gives her some, you know, knowledge about making sure she asks questions, the right questions at the right moment. And that's going to be important along Cirilla's journey. And I think that it pains. You can see the pain in her face to let Ciri and Dara leave. But she knows, again, she's not going to take away her choice. This is Ciri's destiny.
So this section, I think we covered a lot of it, a lot what there is to talk about. But I will say this. I really liked the conversation between Geralt and Yen in the bathtub. Yeah. They're starting to get to know each other. And you can understand through that conversation why these two people would be attracted to each other. They don't have anyone else to talk to mm-hmm. about what they've been through. Mm-hmm. And as we mentioned last episode, in terms of the timeline, these two are the closest in age. They've been on the continent around the same amount of time, and so they've seen a lot. They're older than a lot of the other characters, and they've experienced a lot in the time that they've been alive. Yen was in Irden for 30 years, you know, and we don't know how long it's been since she left. So I think that you can understand why they would be attracted to each other aside from the physical aspect, mm-hmm. because who else are they going to talk to about all this magical shit they've been through?
Yeah. And they talk about it in the bathtub when she's like, basically, you know, saying to him, you know, are all witchers as blessed as you, which has, you know, kind of a double meaning. But basically she's essentially saying, you know, like the skills that he has, the powers he has. And then he, you know, talks to her about, like, well, you know, the enchantment served you well. Like, what was your ailment? Was it a club foot? Was it, you know, but he knows.
Was it split end?
Was it split end? That's good. Great stuff. Yeah, so they know that, you know, they've both, in a sense, because a witcher, right, is formed by, you know, magic in a school. And Yen also has an enchantment that forms her, and most mages do. Hers was a little bit more extreme, and that forms her into being who she is and being a mage. So they both have had these schools that kind of manipulate and change who they are and give them a role in society in the continent. So it's definitely a shared experience that they have. It's pretty cool. So I do want to touch a little bit, and we're going to go in and transition here into things you need to know. And one of the things that I just want to, you know, throw in that's a little bit not in the show, but again, I mentioned it earlier in the summary, and I just want to like speak to in this chapter, which I suggest, you know, what's interesting about the books is that the chapter
the chapters are not linear. It's not like a linear story, which is why the show kind of jumps around. And what I was even able to do in reading was to skip ahead and be like, hey, I want to read this chapter. And what we may look at doing in the future is maybe putting together like chapters that go along with episodes, because I think it's helpful to be able just to read the section and get some context. But what I wanted to speak about was The Last Wish specifically. And one thing you might want to know is that in the book, The Last Wish is heard by Yennefer. She hears it as the djinn is in the room, and everything that you've seen happens and plays out exactly like that in the story in the book. But what she says before, and kind of like the wish that Geralt makes, kind of is what promotes or pushes them to want to have sex. And in the sense of when she hears it, she's touched by what he says. And she says to him in that chapter that, you know, your wish, she whispered, her lips very near to his ear. I don't know whether such a wish can ever be fulfilled. I don't know whether there's such a force in nature that can make that could fulfill such a wish. But if there is, then you've condemned yourself to me. So we know that this wish in some way has linked the rest of them, and he is going to be kind of stuck with Yennefer and Yennefer stuck with him for the duration of their lives on the continent. We just don't know what that is.
Yeah. This is like a big conversation in the Witcher fandom. It was one of the first things that when I started doing research about the show and the Witcher. I've never played the games, as I mentioned before, and I didn't even know that there were books before this. I noticed that this was a common topic on Reddit. It was a common topic on some of the fan pages. What was the last wish, and what does it mean? And I think you said this earlier, but my understanding is the author has never said.
Yeah, it's still to this day is a mystery. The author has not said. The most that I understand that we've gotten. And again, if you guys are listening and you have some other thoughts on it, like, you can hit us up on any of our social media, our email account, like, let us know. But what I've understood is that it's still a mystery to the fandom, that they just kind of like tied in that, okay, well, they must be the condemned yourself to me, really clearly shows that there's some way that they're stuck together. But what the meaning of it is, we don't know. Like, what level, we don't know.
Yeah. So since we're transitioning into things you need to know, I think we should also talk about the song that this episode ends on, which is called The Last Rose of Syntra.
Yeah.
It's actually a really beautiful song, mm-hmm. Very haunting. This is the same song that they've been playing in terms of the musical part every time Syntra has been on screen, but this time it had lyrics. So I went and looked up the lyrics, and those lyrics give us a hint about Ciri's past and her future. So I just want to cover the stuff that we talked about previously, which was mm-hmm. Ciri and Pavetta being her mother, their lineage. And I think there's a hint in the first verse, which mm-hmm. is, the last rose of Syntra has blood upon her thorns, a forgotten tale of elder blood and all futures past reborn. Swirling spheres of otherness and hope and of hope and doom forlorn, her path could lead to happiness or end of times for all.
I was blown away when you sent me these lyrics, and then I stayed and listened to all the credits at the end of this episode. So many Easter eggs. Wow. Like, that's all I can say.
We're not going to share all of the lyrics, because I think there's some spoilers in this song. But if you are interested, all you have to do is Google The Last Rose of Syntra. And you can, there's a YouTube video with the lyrics. You can just read the lyrics, but it's a very pretty song and very haunting. And it definitely is giving us basically the broad strokes of Ciri's storyline. So I love this. I thought it was really great. I wish, and this is a meta comment, I wish that Netflix would have figured out a way to not automatically move to the next episode so quickly, because the first time I watched this, I didn't catch it at all because it basically, you hear the voice and then it skips into the next episode because you know, Netflix skips the credits on a lot of times. So you have to be mindful to go back and ask it not to do that. I think that's the automatic setting on Netflix, is just to move on from the credits. So it's a really cool song. So definitely check it out.
Yeah. And I mean, the line that, you know, you're referencing what we spoke about in the previous episode, and the line that really pops out is a forgotten tale of elder blood. And for those that have been following along and know, like, you know, a lot of the elves speak elder, and the elves also sometimes are referred as the elder ones. So it's really interesting to think, well, man, maybe the people in Sintra didn't need a mage, didn't need any of the Brotherhood's involvement, because they have someone who is actually from the original people that actually, you know magic better than the Brotherhood probably even does. I mean, Pavetta's grandmother obviously had a gift and it came from somewhere. And I think this is a big Easter egg for more exploration in the story later on.
Yeah. Yes, totally.
So the Dopplers also are basically shapeshifters. So we talked about that earlier. They can also absorb the memories of a person whose form they take. So this is really, really important to think about, because he actually even demonstrates this when he says that Malsek thought about suicide and he thought about it not because of fear, but because he was not wanting to be used. So he was able to decipher his thoughts after taking his form.
Yeah. I thought that was interesting. I mean, more than impersonating a person physically, they can really impersonate a person. You know, they know, he said that he knew every thought he ever had, all the plans he ever considered. Mm-hmm. So that's a very powerful gift to have.
Agreed. It's wild.
And then another thing we wanted to mention was that in the same scene, Frangilla mentions a little bit in passing the White Flame. Mm-hmm. The White Flame is a reference to a book in The Witcher 2 video game. And it tells the tale of Emrvar Emrys, who is the Emperor of Nilfgaard. So we talked about this a little bit last episode about whether or not the Black Knight was the king of Nilfgaard, or was there a different king that was off screen. That's still not entirely clear how the show is going to handle this, but mm-hmm. It does appear that there's an Emperor of Nilfgaard that's being referenced here by his moniker, the White Flame.
In the episode, though, what kind of gives a little bit of hint, I don't know if this is that person's name, but it says that Tasaya says to Yen that the king of Nilfgaard has taken back his rightful throne. So whoever was overthrown by the usurper, the bloodline of that person came back and took back the throne, whoever that is. I don't know if this is that guy that we're seeing, but I thought that was pretty interesting. I caught that little bit that she said in the dialogue and it perked my ears up a little bit. So.
Yeah, I definitely want to understand at some point, and it doesn't have to be now, but I want to understand the exact timeline of Nilfgaard's transitions of power, because mm-hmm. it's been referenced multiple times that Nilfgaard frequently has change in power. I'd like to know who was the king of Nilfgaard before the usurper. Is the usurper this person? Is this it's just not really clear. So I hope in the future we get some clarity on who's the lineage of the Nilfgaard monarchy and how all of that stuff happened, because it's very off screen and it's just, we're kind of trying to put together pieces of it just from dialogue, and I would like to know more. I hope it becomes more clear in future episodes or in season two.
Hella unstable government. Hella. Like, it's crazy. Too much.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then also, Franny, she mentions, you know, she mentions to Malsak that he was in a cell of Dimitrium, and I wanted to know what that meant, because to him, like, because to us, it's just like, oh, well, I mean, you can obviously decipher that it means it's a cell that he can't use his magic. But I looked up a little bit, and Dimitrium is a rare and precious metal with an interesting feature in this world, and that it represses the transfer of magical energy. It's a bluish-gray alloy of iron, and Dimitrium is used to produce handcuffs, also necklaces. Those who wear them cannot cast spells or use magic in any way. There are known cases, however, where of extraordinarily powerful sorcerers who manage to overcome the shield that is generated by Dimitrium. So there are some cases where I've also heard some debate where some people debate certain passages within the text that show when a sorcerer actually was able to use Dimitrium to, like, enhance their powers. And this may be one of the things that they put in at the last line to kind of plant an Easter egg there.
Yeah, that was interesting to me. You can kind of pick up what it is from the context clues, but I just think it's really interesting that minerals and rocks and herbs in this world are the things that they can use to constrain various powers mm-hmm. or to heighten them. That's fascinating to me because those are all naturally occurring things.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's really cool.
Yeah. So let's talk about things we like, things we question, things we want to know more of.
So I'll go first and talk about what I liked. This episode is very silly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just silly. Like, they're looking for a genie. You know, there's just, like, all this random sex stuff. Like, it's a silly episode. I really liked that because the last episode was really heavy. So much happened. There was so much of consequence in the last episode, and it was actually, though there was some witty back and forth, it was really heavy. I mean, a baby dies in episode four. So I needed something that wasn't so heavy, and I think it was really smart of them to follow with an episode that was kind of light. And there's, just because it's light doesn't mean there aren't scenes with much consequence. A lot happened in this episode, or we got a lot of information we didn't have before. So I don't think that it was like a throwaway episode, but it was certainly, they kept the mood light. The dialogue was funny. I think Geralt said more in this episode than we've previously heard from him.
Yeah.
And so it was great to see him open up because that Yennefer clearly has that effect on him. He wants to talk to her. He wants to be him. He wants to show her more of himself. So I really liked that this was a funny episode that if you are binging this show, it kind of gave you a break from what was a previously very heavy episode.
Agreed. I like that too. I definitely liked everything that had to do with the backstory but like Yaskier's kind of like, you know, what had been happening outside of his time with Geralt. The fact that they kind of like clearly state that they were apart for a while and then they get back together and like this is kind of transpiring after them not being around for a while. And I like that the timelines, while they're not all happening at the same time, I like that the information is all relevant to each other based on what is happening. That Nilfgaard is, you know, there's a new power structure in that. And then, like, now you see that somebody in Nilfgaard is hunting Ciri, the last rows of Syntra stuff, the stuff that has to do with, like, all of the potions and things, tying things together. And just the fact that you're starting to see, I guess we're just starting, I think this episode is an episode where I start seeing, okay, Geralt and Yen are together. And that is pretty clearly shown by the symbol in the front of the episode with an amphora. And it's the same symbol that she puts on her womb. And then there's a wish. I just really like all of the ways it's like, okay, now they're together. Ciri is somehow going to come into the mix at some point. And this is starting to tie all three of these timelines and these stories together more than we've seen so far. And that really, that I guess that's what I like the most is the way that things are starting to come together, you know?
Mm-hmm. What did you question?
Oh, I questioned something that was not spoken about, but it was spoken about in Broquelon Forest, mentioned in Broquelon Forest by the head of the Dryads, who, when Cirilla says that she was, that the Dryads don't really like her much, she says to her, well, when Queen Calanth closed the gates to Syntra, she did so for the safety of her people. So I wonder if the Dryads were forced into Broquelon Forest based on Queen Calanthe closing the gates to Syntra. I question what that event was that forced Calanthe to close the gates to Syntra. I'm really interested in finding out more about that and what was her reasoning behind that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm always open for more history in this world. I'm kind of like, I think after last week's episode, we finished recording. I was like, I'm probably not going to read the books right away. Right. I think I said on the episode, like, eventually I'll get there, but it's not a priority for me. But now that they're dropping hints about some of the stuff that's happened in the past, I am really invested in the history of this story. And so I didn't have a lot from this episode that I questioned, but I do want to know more about Nilfgaard and, as I said, the transition to power, but also, like, why are they so interested in Cirilla? They're going through so much to get her, and I just want to know what it is about her. Why does they feel like their destiny is tied to this little girl?
Yeah. I am with you on that, and that's what I guess that leads me to what I want to see more of. What I want to see more of is the connection between the royal family of Syntra and the elder people, the elves in this world. I think we're clear that there is some sort of connection through that song lyric. At least we believe so. And I really, really want to see. I think that part of why they may be after her is because that bloodline really, really does play a large role in restoring, kind of like, I think, like, there was a loaded question in why Calanthe asked, tell us more about what you did to the elves at the edge of the world. And then his response endeared him to her, that she would want him to sit at the table. There's a reason, and like we spoke about in last episode, and I really want to see more of what the connection is between Calanthe, Pavetta, the grandmother, and consequently Ciri to the people, King Felivandril and the elves. So,
yep. And for me, I want to know more about that too. I think the only other thing I want to note that I love to see is I just love Yen. She's so engaging. She's just this actress, Anya Chalatra, I think is how you say her name. I'm sorry if I butchered it, but she's incredible. She plays Yen, is both a woman who is firm in her convictions and her beliefs, but also is misguided and confused. And I think Taseya says to her, you are all chaos right now. And I think she's really good at portraying someone who both knows what they want, but is conflicted. And I love Yen. I think she is a really great character, and this actress is playing her really, really well. She's very, very convincing. So
I agree. I guess last thing is I want to know what the Sword of Destiny is. They keep mentioning the Sword of Destiny. I've heard it mentioned a few times. I don't know if it's just kind of like them referring to destiny and using the, kind of metaphor of a sword, how it has, cuts both ways and yada yada. But I would like to know what that is, what that is. So cool. Episode 5 in the books. We are so happy to bring this to you. And you know what? Just want to say to you guys, if you are at all interested also in His Dark Materials, don't forget about all that content that we have. If you have just started joining us with The Witcher, we covered the full season of season 1 of His Dark Materials. Be sure to check it out. Hit us up on any of our social media platforms. Twitter, it's KinFolklorePod. Facebook, you can also get to KinFolklore there. And then you can email us at kinfolklore@gmail.com. So till next week, tip your bard and try to control your chaos, okay?
All right. We will see you next week. Right. Bye, everyone.